Hello, my name's Jonathan Harden, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you all at last to episode one of In Anything at the Minute, the Honest Actors Podcast. It has been a long time coming. Everybody who's been there from the start will know exactly how long that is. The idea first occurred to me way back at the end of February, and since then I've been busying myself, recording interviews, putting together teasers, and trying to get some kind of an audience together for these first few episodes. So thank you if you've been there all through that process, if you've listened to the teasers, if you subscribed, if you've left a rating and review on iTunes, and if you've just helped spread the word on social media, thank you. If it's your first time here, welcome. There are loads more things on the website that you might be interested in, www.inanything.com. There are 12 teaser episodes, little, previews of what's coming up. Each one of those is about 8 to 10 minutes in length, and it's with one actor with whom an interview of full length will be appearing at some point over the coming months. If you like it, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. And if you're feeling really generous, and I'm hoping you are, please leave a rating or a review. That can be quite a tricky process, so if you're finding difficulty leaving a rating or a review, don't be put off. There is an explainer video on the website, www.inanything.com, the front page, big video, click play. I will explain everything. Now, as a thank you to all of you, I'm giving away over 350 quid's worth of stuff, details of which will be given at the end of this episode, but I'll say for now, it includes a Spotlight Annual membership. So if you're interested in winning a Spotlight Annual membership, and let's face it, who isn't, stick around. For now though, please enjoy episode one, Denise Goff. First of all, I have to say thank you very much
you're welcome.
For taking part and giving your time. It's very much appreciated, and I'm glad we've been able to find a time when you're free.
Yeah, me too.
Because I know you're about to get very busy.
You.
So it starts relatively simply, and all I would like to ask to begin is, how did you get into acting?
Right, so I did, I was part of the Ennis Musical Society once in the west of Ireland when I was about 8 or 9, I think, and then I did a school show. But then, seriously getting into it, because there was no way I was going to be an actress in the west of Ireland, I came to London when I was 16, and then I kind of pissed about for a bit, and then I did a foundation course at Lewisham College, which I hated, and then I started doing an improvisation class every Saturday at a nightclub in Camberwell that had been closed down because there was loads of shootings. So we had a 3-hour class every Saturday, and I fucking loved it. And no matter what was going on, I was at that class. And the teacher suggested I go to drama school, so I borrowed some money to do auditions. And he was a tutor at the drama school that I ended up getting a scholarship to go to.
Okay, different question. Why did you get into acting? Why? In those early days, was it so appealing to you, do you think?
I've no idea, to be honest. I've asked myself it a lot, in that really wanky way that you do. I don't know, I've always wanted to do it, always. But I always wanted to be on stage. I love being on stage. So, I guess pretending to be other people, I like doing that. I was always doing that as a kid, pretending to be French, or pretending to be, like, I remember being in London early and pretending I could work in an office, you know, and I got a briefcase and I got a suit and everything. There's nothing in the briefcase. I lied about having like 70 words a minute. It turned out in the test I had 11. I liked pretending to be other people, maybe that's why.
Do you remember then, if you love it so much, you must, I guess, the first time you were on stage, you had an experience akin to being on stage, performing in front of an audience?
Right, so I played, when I was 12, I played Miss Hannigan in Annie. And I remember something went really wrong on stage. Something went wrong, and I just made a load of shit up, and the audience started laughing, and I thought, oh, I fucking like this bit. Because I'd been in Fiddler on the Roof before, but I was kind of in the background in the chorus. I wasn't interested in that at all. But as soon as it was all about me, darling, I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Did you, in those early days, have the support of your family in it, when it was a hobby or when it was something that Denise did? Was it something they backed?
It was just something I did once a week, but I really loved it. But no, I mean, the west of Ireland, I come from a family of 11 children. Acting wasn't an option for a career. So no, there wasn't support for it, there wasn't. And I left home very young too, so there wasn't support for that either.
At what point then do you personally begin to realise that there could be a career in it? So if you come from a background where that just doesn't happen, nobody leaves Ennis or somewhere like that and becomes an actor, makes a living from it, when did you realise that actually might be a possibility for you?
When I was on stage in the West End. I thought, fucking hell, how did this happen? Jesus.
But you must have thought there was a career in this when you were... when you made the transition from somebody doing workshop classes in Camberwell to somebody who was going, right, well, a person believes in me and I'm going to audition for drama school.
Mm. I think I've always thought I could do it.
Somehow.
I just never had any doubt. I just didn't think that I would be able to make this kind of... I mean, I've had really rough times, but I've been really fortunate in the work that I've been able to do. You know, I didn't think that it was going to go like this, you know?
Yeah.
Because when I came to London at 16, I used to walk up and down Shaftesbury Avenue, fucked, you know, picking up fag butts to make cigarettes, thinking, I just want to be an actress. How the hell am I going to be an actress? I've lost everything. I don't know. I don't know. Sheer fucking belief. I've got no choice but to have it happen, I suppose.
You said that... you know, you didn't expect that you would have a career, regardless of the difficulties that we all face, you faced, that you'd have a career that you've had. What were your expectations coming out of ALRA of what might lie in front of you?
I thought I'd just, you know, I'd do plays. I really wanted to set up a theatre company. You know, my first year at drama school, I stood up and I said, look, I want to set up a company. Does anyone want to do that? And one person came up to me afterwards and I was like, what the fuck is this about? I wanted to make theatre. I wanted to be on stage. And I kind of figured I was going to be one of those, you know, I would be broke all the time, which I have been, actually. So yay to me, I was right on that. But I thought I'd make theatre with people and we would sit around smoking fags and drinking wine and, like, making theatre, which now I think, oh God, I'm so pretentious. But yeah, I wanted to make stuff, you know. But I think I started drama school at a time where people started to want to be famous, and so that's what I was faced with.
We don't really focus on jobs unless they come up. So I like to give people an opportunity to, as a way of identifying themselves, I suppose, to people who might not know who they are. And also just
everyone.
Just as a kind of, before we talk in some part about negatives or things that have been
challenges.
Difficult. Challenges is a good way of describing it. That I say, if you could pick one job, and it can be, you know, that speaks of you, that you think, that's the kind of work I'd love to do, that's something I'm really proud of, it could be the job you're most proud of, aside from, playing my spouse.
Being your wife in a Titanic of a show that sank without trace.
Not in my house.
Yeah, we're still watching it there.
So what would that be?
Desire Under the Elms at the Lyric Theatre, directed by Sean Holmes, was the part and the production and the relationship with a director that defines now how I think about myself as an actor, and I'm forever grateful to him and that role
and
for doing that.
If you don't mind me saying, for which I believe you won an award.
Best newcomer. Still standing newcomer, as I like to call it, which was hilarious, considering I've been working for 11 years.
Well, that's what I was about to ask. It struck me at the time as well-deserved, but ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not about the awards, right, but it was nice to...
It must have been.
It was nice. But what was nice was, you know, I was nominated at the Evening Standard Award, and what was really nice was the award went to an actual newcomer. And I got a big shiny night with my sister. You know, I think we nicked a few forks and talked about the fact that 15 years ago, I anything could have happened. And there I was sitting at a table with Sean and my sister, and I was chuffed to bits. And then I won the newcomer award. So I was given that award without any fanfare. You know, you went to a little room in a theatre in the middle of the day, and I was able to say in my speech, look, thank. It was the critics' circle, so I was able to say, I think we all know that I've been working for 10 years, but if they had given me that award 10 years ago, I wouldn't have noticed it in the same way. You know, I was really genuinely, that was a fucking part. That was an amazing experience.
But then, and I'm not kind of leading you down a line where I want you to say no to this, but did it change anything for you?
Oh, it was weird because I remember talking to Sean about it afterwards. He offered me a job and I was like, you know, it would have been a long contract. And I said, listen, mate, I have to fucking cash in. You know, this, I have to use this to kind of, first of all, earn some fucking money and generate a bit more work for myself. And that's not going to happen if I disappear for a year. So I was trying to be quite strategic, but it turned out that, you know, it got me a bit of different kind of attention. But like last year, I had the quietest, most challenging year I've ever had in my career. And
was that because you were being very picky?
No.
Or was it because?
No, love. No, it really wasn't. And people think that, you know, they think, yeah, but you must be turning shit down. I'm like, no, I really fucking wasn't. You know, I really wasn't. I don't think I turned anything down in the last year. Yeah, I don't think I did. I got turned down. I got rejected a fucking lot, and I thought, right, I need to kind of maybe do some telly auditions, you know. And so that started, and that's a whole different world, man. Doesn't matter what you do in the room for a telly audition. It's like, you know, I had somebody. I remember sharing with my beautiful friend Minnie Gale. She was like, I had a director kiss my hand before I left the room, and then she never heard anything again. And it's been a great lesson for me to learn that. You know, I prepare, do whatever, but, you know, if I remind an executive of his ex-wife or her ex-wife or ex-husband, I'm not going to get the part. You know, it's nothing to do with what I can do. That's it. I mean, I lost out to something recently, and I posted this on Facebook because I believe in kind of raising awareness around it. And I was told, you know, I heard that the part that I'd gone up for, that same thing, you know, I'd gone, okay, that was a good fucking audition. And it went to another actress, and I said, oh, that's really interesting, because she was like 10 years younger than me. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting thing. So my agent went back and asked the casting director, you know, what happened there? And basically, I was told, look, you did the most intelligent audition, but the other women in the show aren't very, what word did they use? Maybe it was hot, or not, aren't very conventionally beautiful or something. So they need a hot girl, and so they went with a more conventionally pretty girl. Now, that's a load of shit, you know, because what that did was it insulted everyone, including, and I know she's not going to be worried about it, but including the lovely woman who got the part. You know, it's like fucking hell. That's a disgrace that they're allowed to say that. But how, that's just the way that it is, isn't it? But I think by talking about it, we can raise how ridiculous that sounds, you know? Yeah. Because having said that, and I tell that story, and then I have another story about losing out to a girl who was 10 years or 6 years older for a part that they could have gone younger with, and I was able to go, yes, fucking at least they're casting within the right age. And but when you're told you're not conventionally hot enough, it stung for a little bit, but then I realised, yeah, but I'm totally
so here's my growing skills in segue. Yeah. We've just been talking about...
Oh my God, is this a segue?
When you don't get the job.
Oh yeah, right.
So this has been in all of them so far, and I feel like this agent should be named, but he will remain nameless. An agent once told me that... A couple
love
of
that agents say these things.
The only time an actor's ever happy, Jonathan...
Jonathan
is when they get the call to say they've got the job, and that 5 minutes is magical, because after 5 minutes the fear sets in. Am I good enough? I'm gonna have to actually do this. Can I afford to do this? Should I have turned it down? What else will come up? Do you recognize yourself in that, and if so, what kind of things do you worry about from 5 minutes onwards?
Right, so I recognised an old version of myself in that. And then I realised that that wasn't fun for me. Thinking that way is not fun. If a child came up to me having got some great news and then was like, oh my God, I'm really scared, I wouldn't then go to the child, yeah, and then it's going to be shit from there on. I wouldn't scare the child, so why am I scaring myself, you know? I have got a job recently that has been nothing but joyful from the moment I got it, and it will continue regardless of how it turns out until the job is over and from then on too. I don't engage with that anymore. I think that that's kind of, we're fed that idea, you know, feed the fear. There's a collective anxiety amongst actors that we keep pouring the anxiety in. Well, I'm taking the fucking, my anxiety is out of that pot. I don't get anxious about stuff like that anymore. I don't.
What do you get anxious about then?
Okay, so what I used to, being broke, man. I don't like being broke. I find it hard. I do. You know, it takes its toll when you can't afford to pay your rent. It takes its fucking toll. And I think that that's, you know, when I see kind of, and I'm not saying this to have a bitching session at privileged actors, because there's a place for fucking everyone as far as I'm concerned, but there is something in when you do not have to worry about money or where, you know, or having to maybe take a job just for the money, you know, it gives you a certain glow. And there are times when I don't have that glow because I'm worried that I can't pay my rent. So that has been my fear in the past. But my father has also said to me, if the only thing you're worried about in this life is money, then you're doing all right.
Do you carry that fear of financial kind of ruin? Do you carry that into auditions? Do you have to?
Not anymore.
Do you have to kind of drop that? Do you make a conscious effort?
Yeah, because the last year was so difficult. I had to get to a point that I realised that with or without money, I'm all right. You know, I'm still enough without, you know. The last year was the best year that ever happened to me in my career. I was surviving on £30 a week at certain points, doing my shopping in my sister's fridge. And I'm so grateful for it because I don't want to live in any kind of fear, financial or otherwise. So going forward, I'm not going to worry about that either. You know, I'm just not going to. I refuse.
So does that mean then the new Denise enjoys auditions immensely?
Yeah, and I tell you, I've always loved auditions. I always have, unless there's a wanker in the room and you just, it's not happening, you know. But I've always loved them. I see them as an opportunity. My little sister says it brilliantly because she's an actress, and she says you might never get, especially on the good stuff, you might never get to do it again. Enjoy it, you know. And so I have always enjoyed auditions.
Just a quick interruption from me to say, if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe on iTunes. Why wouldn't you? If you're feeling particularly generous, you can also leave a rating and a review. And if you've done that already, you can follow us on Twitter at Honest Actors. Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/honestactors. And to show that I appreciate it, stick around to the end of the episode when I'll be giving details of how you can win that annual Spotlight membership and a subscription to the stage, among other things. Stick around. For now though, back to Denise.
So what do you do then when you don't get the call and you're finding yourself in a period where you're unemployed? What kind of things do you do to stay sane?
You know, I realised, especially in the last year, I cannot get my self-esteem from being an actress. I just can't. It's not going to work for me anymore. I tried it. It doesn't work. It's empty. When you hang out with kids that you love and that love you when you're out of work, they're not saying to you, yeah, but you're not working at the moment, so you're a bit shit, aren't you? They're just like brilliant, the funny ones here.
So did you always find it easy to stay positive? It sounds like you've kind of something you've cracked of late. And I know when I work with you, which is unbelievably nearly 3 years ago, that certainly was my impression of you, that you were very positive, very together. But someone who kind of, you know, took it all with a pinch of salt, even then, and you've said it's even more recent.
Yeah.
So before that, if I'd met you, say, you said with your sister 15 years ago, anything could have happened. If I'd met you, you know, a couple of years out of ARA, you've been at the Everyman, you've come out on a high, and maybe things haven't gone quite so well all the time. Mm. What back then, how did that manifest itself back then, those
I was scared, man. I was a scared young actress. And also the thing was, I did very well quite quickly in theatre, you know, and by year two of outside of drama school, I was, you know, in the West End hanging out with really famous people, which completely freaked me out because, you know, my self-esteem was on the floor for a long time. And, you know, I used work and other things to kind of bolster me up, you know, and so when a job would finish, I'd be fucking devastated. No, I mean, listen, mate, I've had a fuckload of therapy, so that has helped.
And you're not the first that said that.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, with what we do face in this job, you know, because I'm with a friend of yours who's written a beautiful article about what it is for him to be an actor and how, you know, I'm just a tradesperson, you know, this is my trade and everything. But unfortunately, my trade brings with it something that triggers every single one of my emotional fucking flaws, defects, whatever you want to call it. So I owe it to myself, if I want to have a happy, healthy life, I owe it to myself to do the work necessary to fucking love myself anyway, man, you know? Because the first few years in this business, I was having loads of success and I was missing it all because I was like, well, what's that person doing? And what's that? And should I be over there now? And should I be going to that party? And should I be doing, you know, it was just a load of shit. I'd missed it. My agent was beautiful once. She said to me, I got a part in a play in Ireland and it was fucking amazing with two of my favourite actors, you know. And I got the part and I did that thing, you know, the 5 minutes of yay. And then, but shouldn't I be doing films now? Like, shouldn't I be doing it? And she said, I'm going to say this to you once, you're fucking missing it. I went into her office nearly 15 years ago now, my little wow. shaved head, and I said to her, I want to do theatre. For the rest of my life, I want to do theatre. That's it. And she said, and that's what you've been doing for 5 years. At this point, I'd been out for 5 years. And she said, and what? So why are you pointing? Why are you over there? And I thought, she's dead fucking right, you know? If I keep, and I see it happening to friends of mine now, you know, as they become more and more successful, the fear is even greater.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I hate it because I think you're missing it. You're missing these beautiful moments of work that are happening because you're thinking, you know, because the ego will find a way to fuck up everything.
I had a moment on the job we worked on where I was in the back of a car with an actor who remained nameless, who's extremely successful. You'll probably work out who it is. Mm-hmm. Where he had exactly that. And and it was a big moment for me because I thought, it's all relative.
Absolutely.
The bigger the jobs, the bigger the fears, the bigger the earnings, the bigger the tax bill. Mm-hmm. Like, and that can be emotional tax, it can be whatever.
Absolutely.
Like, it's all relative.
Yeah, but also that's what I mean about making the choice, you know, because I firmly, absolutely 100% believe that it's a choice, you know. I choose to go the way of the ego, or I choose to go the more kind, loving way, which is, how do I work out a way of, you know, my work is not my life. My life is my life. My work is part of my life. If it stops bringing me joy, then I'm going to have to question whether I do it or not. You know, I just, yeah, after after a year in what I lovingly call Siberia, you know, yeah, I'm so grateful to the lessons it's learned because every job I've had since, I'm just like, thank you, you beautiful, beautiful people for giving me another job.
Justine Mitchell said, every job is against the odds.
Yeah,
and every job is a victory, and it's so true.
Yeah,
but
you can easily forget that.
Of course,
if they keep coming, and suddenly it's like, well, I'm not being paid enough. Well, why don't I have this trailer? Why don't I fuck that?
You just mentioned Siberia, which I thought was lovely. Being in Siberia,
but I got that from a thing that Ewan McGregor did on The Long Way Round, and
right.
he started in
Siberia.
He started in Siberia on his bike. My friend told me this when I was in Siberia recently, and she told me this story and I really hold on to it. And basically he was in Siberia and he was like, what the fuck have I done? I've left my family for this. He kept falling off the bike. 3 months later, he's cruising down San Francisco somewhere and a truck clips him out of nowhere and he almost goes under the truck, but he pulls himself out and comes out to the side of the road and the cameraman's like, fucking hell, we thought you were dead. And he said, yeah, and I would have been if it hadn't been for Siberia, because in Siberia I learned how to stay on the fucking bike. And so, you know, I've been in Siberia or the desert or whatever you want to call it for the last year, but I have learned so much about how to stay on the bike, man, and enjoy the fucking ride.
Does being out of work for a long time, that time or before, does it necessarily align with a low point personally?
No, I mean, there were low points. I sat in the Curzon Cinema with a friend of mine in bits, you know. I was like, I don't know what the fuck is happening. I don't know what am I doing? And then I realized I'm not doing anything. Like, I'm holding on too tightly to something, and so I stopped. So I let go, and I started getting into my life, you know, seeing people. You know, it took going right to the wall and thinking, fuck, for me to go, no, hang on, you don't get this, you don't get my spirit anymore, you don't. So what happened was, so I got to a point where I was really happy. Really happy. Once a week, I'd look after some kids. I'd see my own niece and nephew all the time, and I was really happy. And then work came in. Whereas before, in the past, a job would come in, and I'd go, "Okay, I'm fine now," and I don't want to live that way anymore.
So you no longer equate working with being fine. You have to be fine regardless.
Yeah. In between jobs, I live. I don't wait. You know, I used to wait. I used to wait for life to start again. I don't want this from my life. I refuse to have... I am prepared for this industry. I'm prepared to give my time when I'm working. I'm prepared to learn my lines. I'm prepared to, you know, do the research that's needed for any given part, and I'm prepared to show up and do the job. But I'm not prepared to give over relationships. Like, I have a younger sister who's an actress. She's absolutely fucking gorgeous. She's really, really brilliant and super intelligent. Now, if I buy into the notion that I'm in competition, like, we go up for the same parts all the time. If I buy into the notion of competition in this industry, then I have to sacrifice my relationship with my sister. Like, there's no fucking way I'm going to do that. I'm just not going to do it. And so I apply that now across the board. I don't, this industry takes enough. It gets enough. It gets its money's worth without me giving all of that other stuff. Jesus, I'm quite tangential, aren't I?
No, you're not at all. I mean, this part of the interview, I think, is, from my point of view, the least well thought through, because it's just kind of like, and then what will I ask them? So you're doing a bit of childminding, I assume, to make some money as well. Have you ever done anything else outside of acting? What kind of jobs have you done in between times?
Do you know what I did? I did...
To make rent.
Oh God, waitressing, years and years of waitressing. And then I did one night in a restaurant about 6 months ago, and I just found that now at nearly 36, I don't want to do that. I'm sorry, I loved it so much for so long, and I was so fucking good at it. And I remember being a lead in the West End, and then 2 weeks later, serving people who had paid 50 quid to see me in a show, serving them dinner in a restaurant in Shoreditch. So it stood me in really good stead for a long time, but no more, I'm afraid. I physically don't have it in me. And also, somebody Googled me from as I served their chicken and chips. They Googled me, and I was like...
What's your name?
What have you been in? Yeah. You know, another minute.
And every time, if they're regulars, what I hate about restaurants is, if they're regulars, they come in and they go, "Oh, you're still not working. Yeah. Oh, you're still not working."
That's the reality of being an actor. You know, a handful of people get to just do acting.
What's the most annoying thing that non-actors that you know ask you about your job?
Oh, you know what? I used to think about this and think, oh, people are, it's annoying. But now I just think it's really sweet. I mean, the one is, how do you learn all those lines? But actually, how the fuck do we learn all those lines? But I remember talking to an actress, Kate Fleetwood, about it. We were doing a play, and she suggested that when people ask it, we should just go, magic.
So what's the most difficult thing about being an actor? I mean, it could be for you now. You've obviously solved some of the big issues that you have in your
life. Today, I've solved them, but, you know,
but it could
work
come back.
In progress.
But what, today, what for you is the most difficult thing about being an actor?
I think the financial insecurity. Like, I think, although I've done a lot of work around it, I still think, you know, that kind of insecurity. I mean, my aim, if I was to be able, and I think this is possible, I know this is possible, I would like to buy a little place to live so that no matter what my work situation was, I have a home, you know, a home that I'm not going to lose at any point. That, I think... But then, of course, that will happen, and I'll find something else that... No, actually, I won't find something else to be scared about, because I'm not doing fear anymore. I'm done with it. And we said goodbye. Still lives with me a bit. But
you have to remind yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every day. let me not be afraid.
So those moments when things haven't been going well, or those moments when it's difficult, or when there's fear, you haven't referenced it yet, I don't think, but have you ever considered, even momentarily, seriously or not, giving up?
Yeah, I've talked about it, absolutely. I mean, my mum was very sweet when she came to visit me during in Siberia this time, and I had to make room for her in my tent, and she came to see me, and I was in bits, you know? I was like, fucking hell, what if my story is that I'm going to be that woman that they go, she was doing really well, whatever happened to her? And I thought, I'm going to have to make my peace with that if that's what happened. And my mum said to me, Niecy, you have always been very good at cleaning. Why don't you be a cleaner? And I was like, I'm not sure I can hear that now, Mum, because that's pretty different to what I want to do. But in fairness, she said, you know, you can bring dignity to whatever you do. And I was like, yeah, I can't hear that. But when she left, I applied to be a cleaner, because I thought, she's absolutely fucking right. And I think, I know that I'm never going to give up being an actor. I know that I'm not. I think that's something that came up in Siberia for me as well. I know that I'm not. It's in my every fibre of my being. But I am going to give up on the fear of being, of what it is to be an actor. I am going to, I am daily now getting involved in my life, you know, and that's a great thing for me, because it means I don't ever have to have that conversation of maybe I'm going to give up, because I'm saying to you now, it's recorded, I'm never going to give up.
Oh shit, I forgot.
Being an actor. Fuck you.
I forgot. Can we go back to the start? I've totally forgotten the press record.
I love it too much.
Why do you love it then? Why have you not given up? What's the good thing? What are the best things about being an actor?
Oh man, just being on stage. I love rehearsals. I love actors. Oh, I mean, we're fucking bonkers, but brilliant. The people, like that job we did, fucking hell. You know, I thought, you know, I was in my kind of the this is going to be the thing. You know, when I used to think that way, I thought that was, you know, it was my first big telly job, you know. And nothing came of that career-wise. But I was introduced to some of the most fantastic people I've ever worked with. And no matter how far away we move from each other, it doesn't really matter, you know. And I love that about being an actor.
Going back to Denise coming out of ALRA, and just probably before you get the call to say you're going to the Everyman, if you could offer that, you know, innocent, in some ways innocent, young woman some advice for the future, what would it have been?
Go easy on yourself. Just go easy on yourself. And maybe don't drink so much. But go easy on yourself, love. You're doing fucking great.
If I appointed you queen and overlord, overlady, of all things acting, and you had for one day a chance to change as much as you could, what things would rise to the top of that list?
Oh, well, I'd have to say, like, people from less privileged backgrounds would have to have a go at, you know. People moan about it being like, you know, it's turning into a middle class industry and everything. Well, of course it is. So we need to do something about it. And people like Sean Holmes at the Lyric, he and his team have regenerated that building to create basically a drama school for kids who can't afford to go to drama school. And that's amazing. So again, solution-based thinking. I don't want to sit around in victimhood about it, but I couldn't have gone to drama school if I didn't have a scholarship. And I would give people who don't maybe have the opportunity to have a go.
And finally, are you in anything at the minute?
Oh my God, am I? Yep. I'm doing a play at the National, which is I've never worked at the National. It's my first job there. I have told the director that from the moment I step in there, there will be tears.
And that's it. That's episode one done. Thanks once again to Denise Goff for her time. I couldn't be happier with these first two episodes of the podcast, both this one and episode two with Tom Goodman Hill. So thank you. If you want to listen to episode two with Tom Goodman Hill right now, and if you do, that's probably the best idea you've had all year. You need do nothing. Technology,
will take care of you. Just sit back, relax, and episode 2 should queue up automatically. For now though, let me give you details of that competition, the big launch giveaway. If you want to win a Spotlight annual membership, a headshot session with StageShots.London, and an annual subscription to The Stage, both in print and online, well, all you need to do is go to inanything.com/competition and enter there for free. That's it. inanything.com/competition. Next up, Tom Goodman Hill. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon.
I would like to state for the record that in actual fact, I was playing your husband in that job, because we keep on referring to you as my wife, but it was totally the other way around. I was your plus one.